produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Daily Audio Stash is where responsible marijuana smokers listen in on the latest news about cannabis, hear the voices of the marijuana law reform movement in special segments and interviews, and kick back with comedy and music no other podcast can offer. It's Normal's Daily Audio Stash. More information at normalaudiostash.com.
Whether on a train, plane, ferry, or automobile, these days I'm never far removed from listening to Normal's Daily Audio Stash and weekly news on my computer or iPod. Where else in the world can folks listen to up-to-date information produced specifically for cannabis consumers? This is Normal's Executive Director, Alan St. Pierre, and Normal is growing the truth about cannabis, and the harvest is yours to reap. Tune in every day at 4:20 p.m. for your Daily Audio Stash. Get hooked up with Normal's daily and weekly news podcast by visiting norml.org or normalaudiostash.com.
First up today, it's news from Normal. Our news today, pot initiative on the ballot in Santa Monica. Santa Monica city officials this week confirmed that a municipal initiative that seeks to make marijuana law enforcement the city's lowest priority has been certified to appear on the November 2006 ballot. Sponsored by Santa Monicans for Sensible Marijuana Policy, the measure directs municipal police to make activities related to the investigation, citation, and or arrest of adult cannabis users their lowest priority. It would also appoint a community oversight committee to monitor police activity as it pertains to marijuana law enforcement. Seattle voters passed a similar proposal in 2003, which has led to a 75% reduction in citywide marijuana arrests. This past June, West Hollywood City Council officials voted in favor of a resolution calling on Los Angeles County Sheriff's deputies to not, quote, target adult marijuana users who consume this drug in private and pose no danger to the community, close quote. Santa Cruz and Santa Barbara voters will decide on similar municipal ballot measures in November. Similar efforts will likely appear on the November ballot in several Michigan cities. In addition, Colorado officials are currently in the process of certifying a statewide initiative to eliminate all criminal penalties for adults who possess an ounce or less of cannabis for personal use. A South Dakota measure to legalize the state-authorized use of medicinal cannabis has been certified for the November 2006 ballot. We have links to read the complete Santa Monica measure on our website at normalaudiostash.com. Welcome back to the Audio Stash. Today, I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Take a moment to join us at Normal to end marijuana prohibition in America. Just visit norml.org. Also, check out the new Cafe Press store for the Audio Stash. You can get mugs, t-shirts, and all kinds of cool stuff to let everyone know you support the daily podcast for responsible marijuana smokers. We have links right up at normalaudiostash.com. Thursdays here on the program, we focus on legal and legislative issues. And later in the show today, we'll hear from Irvin Rosenfeld, one of the five medical marijuana patients in the United States, about some particular hurdles he's had to face recently. Let's start things off today with another of our Prohibition History segments, because we gotta understand the past to change the future. We'll hear from Dale Gerringer of California Normal today. Dale joins us Monday here on The Stash. You can listen to that program right in the Normal Audio Stash archive.
Well, we're going to talk about history today, and it's actually a very timely topic. As you know, San Francisco is currently celebrating the 100th anniversary of the Great Earthquake. There's actually another anniversary going on, though, which you might not have seen so much about, although I will be putting out a press release about it next week, the 100th anniversary of drug prohibition and of the drug war. I'll explain that in a second, but it's interesting to remember, you know, when San Francisco burned, there was still no such thing as an illegal drug in this country. The way I always think of it, it's in the my own grandparents' youth, it was possible for them to go into drug stores and buy any drug pretty much over the counter. Heroin was available, morphine, opiates, cocaine, chloral hydrate, and cannabis was there too. But this changed. And there was the first change at the federal level, the signal change, was when Congress itself, on May 7th, 1906, passed a model bill called the District of Columbia Pharmacy and Poisons Act. Everybody's forgotten about this bill, but it actually started the war on drugs in the District of Columbia. What this bill did was it said, from now on, it's going to be illegal to sell drugs, narcotics, by which they meant opium, cocaine, and chloral, over-the-counter to drug fiends. You can only sell them for valid medical purposes and not just for addiction, okay? And then they went on and they started to enforce it as well. They started sending in agents to the drug stores to make sure that none of the drug stores were selling cocaine without a prescription and so forth. And that was the beginning of the war on drugs. It was in the District of Columbia, because at that time, no one thought, no one imagined that Congress had the power to regulate drug use or drug sales in the states. But it was considered a model bill for the states to follow. It was quickly followed up by next year by California, numerous other states, and half the states already had a war on drugs going before the famous Harrison Act in 1914, which became the first federal anti-narcotics law for the entire country. Now, cannabis was not actually in the 1906 D.C. Act, but it got included soon in some of the state laws, and I'm going to talk about that later. There was, however, another law in 1906, passed in June of 1906, that did mention cannabis. And that's the famous Pure Food and Drugs Act. And that act had a labeling provision for drugs saying that any medicines that contained certain intoxicating narcotics, including opium and alcohol and cannabis, indica was one of them, had to state the contents on the label. Before that, you could just put anything in a bottle and call it, you know, Dr. Quack's Cure, and that was fine. But cannabis was one of the things that had to be specified on the label, recognizing at the time, in fact, that cannabis was a medicine in 1906. Of course, now the same act, the Food and Drug Administration's powers have been vastly expanded, and now, of course, the current Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act is used as an excuse for saying that marijuana is not a drug at all. So it's very interesting the way history changes things around and turns them on their head, and it's useful to remember how different things used to be, and it gives one hope how maybe things might be different again when we get into the new century.
That was author, activist, and coordinator of California Normal, Dale Gerringer. That was his short talk on prohibition in the United States at the Normal 2006 annual conference. Next up today, it's time for some pod-safe independent music found up at podshow.com. Here's a group called The Joint Conspiracy with this track, Homegrown. Joint Conspiracy with Homegrown, a track found up at podshow.com. We have links to the band and Podshow right up at normalaudiostash.com. Next up today, it's time for our interview with one of America's most visible and compelling voices for medical marijuana, Mr. Irvin Rosenfeld. He joined us for a conversation by phone last week from Miami. Irvin Rosenfeld, welcome to the Audio Stash today.
Thank you.
It's great to speak with you today. Irv, we're going to talk about a few of the unique situations you've run into recently. Let's start with this eBay story. Tell us a little bit about what happened with this eBay fundraiser that you're involved with.
To raise funds for patients out of time for our conference that we just had, you know, for travel expenses and such, we decided we wanted to sell some of our empty tin cans as collector's items. So normally we've been putting them on eBay and selling them for a minimum of $420. Now, all of a sudden, eBay came back to us and said that we would no longer be allowed to sell this on eBay, that it was considered drug paraphernalia or whatever it was. And so, therefore, an empty tin can with a government label on it was not going to be allowed to be sold on eBay.
Irv, these are containers you receive your federal medical marijuana in. A number have been sold for charity. Tell our listeners a little bit about the object itself here. How big is it?
It's about 8 inches in circumference. It's a round tin can, and it looks like a cookie tin. basically. And the tin can, you put, if government puts in there is approximately 300 already rolled filterless cigarettes. They've got styrofoam in the bottom, then they put the cigarettes in there, then styrofoam at the top, then they seal it with wax. And on the outside is a label saying Raleigh Research Triangle. It says how much the marijuana weighs, how much the paper weighs, how much each joint weighs, how much the entire can is holding as far as the amount of grams. And it has a number on there so they can go back to their inventory and check when it was actually manufactured. And so that label's on there. And then my pharmacy puts a regular prescription label, my prescription label, on there. And so that's also on there. And I do black out my doctor's name so you cannot see who the doctor is. But other than that, it's an empty tin can with those two labels attached to it.
Now let's talk about this second story. Irv is a sailing enthusiast and a racer as well as an instructor. And Irv, I know you ran into some difficulty with a competition last year. Tell us about your sailing experience and about that competition.
Okay, I sail with an organization in Miami called Shake a Leg Miami. It's sailing condition boats and a whole organization basically set up for disabled. We have 20-foot sailboats with a main sheet and a jib, both self-tacking. So when you turn the boat, the sails automatically go to the other side. We have a chair built into the back of the boat to where paraplegic, quadriplegic, whatever disability, amputee can sit in that chair, be strapped in if they can't hold themselves up, and with a tiller extender actually drive the boat. Then there's another chair built on the other side of the boat up front to where a person, disabled person, sitting in that chair, the lines for the two sails come over to where he is, and he can sit in the chair and actually let the sails in and pull them in and let them out. So you actually have disabled people, you know, sailing the boat with the wheelchairs left on the dock. And so I've been a member of this organization for 12 years. I sail once, if not twice a week, every week. And we have competition for these boats because we have them around the country. And we have a North American Championship every year in Chicago. If you qualify on a regional event, then you've got an all-expense-paid trip to Chicago to race the top disabled sailors in the country and in North America, actually, because there's Canadians there also. In this particular case, I qualified last year, and 3 weeks before I was supposed to go to Chicago, I got a phone call from some girl saying she's with the United States Anti-Doping Association. I thought it was one of my friends playing a trick on me until she said, you've applied to go to the North American Challenge Cup, but you haven't applied for an exemption for your marijuana. And I said, well, I don't need an exemption for my marijuana. I'm one of the federal patients. She said, it's a banned substance. I said, well, I realize it's a banned substance for everybody in the United States except for me and, you know, four of the people. And she reiterated again, no, it's a banned substance. And then a light bulb went off, and I said, you mean a banned substance like steroids in sports? She said, yes. I said, well, I guess maybe it is. She said, yeah, but we know that you get it from the federal government, so we need you to fill out a form that we can approve you to be able to use this substance, you know, while you're racing. I go, okay. So she said, and this should have been done weeks ago because it usually takes a month and a half to get this done, and you've only got 3 weeks, so we've got to get this 1, 2, 3. So she sent me the form, and I filled it out, sent it to my doctor, who was away for a week. So when he got back, he signed his name and sent it back to me so I could send it back to U.S. Sailing and to the Olympic Committee, United States Olympic Committee in Colorado Springs. I got that. Meanwhile, while I'm waiting to get this signed and sent back, I get a letter from U.S. Sailing and from the Olympic Committee saying that if I did not have this approval, that they're pulling my invitation to go. Now, I got furious at them. I'm saying, here you're pulling my invitation because I'm on a banned substance. What about all the other disabled sailors that are on their banned substances, such as morphine or, you know, and other drugs? I said, no one contacted them, only me. I said, that's discrimination. And since they know that I have attorneys, you know, the top attorneys in the country free of charge, they realized that I was going to sue them. So then they sent me another letter saying that if I didn't have approval by the time the race comes, would I please refrain from taking my medicine for the 5 days in Chicago? But they were going to let me come. So I didn't even dignify that with an answer. I figured, okay, at least they're going to let me come. So I went out there, and, of course, I took my medicine the 5 days I was there. I just did it in my hotel room, and I walked away from everybody. But everybody knew what I was doing. So then when I got back, I actually got the answer from the United States Anti-Doping Association turning me down. Now, when they turned me down, I called them and got the lead attorney on the phone and said I'd already left a message with him to Google me, and he hadn't done that yet. So I said, well, if you'd have done that, you'd have seen that I don't like taking no for an answer. And that's all I said to him. So then I contacted the newspapers in Colorado Springs and in Newport, Rhode Island, and told them the story. They contacted him, and then he contacted me, and he's going to allow me to reapply. Now, what I told him after learning more about how you have to fill out the forms is I said, it seems like to me that if you turn me down, you have to turn me down with a reason, and there's only two reasons to turn me down. Number one, if you say that the drug is a performance-enhancing drug. Well, if you want to say that marijuana is a performance-enhancing drug, I won't say another word. But I think the federal government might say something to you. The other reason is if I'm a detriment on that medicine to my fellow competitor. Well, the fact that the federal government allows me to drive on this medicine proves that it's not a I'm not a detriment to my fellow competitor. So therefore, they have really no legal reason to turn me down. So he also reiterated that if he approves me, that it'll only be for me. It won't be for any other sailors. So, of course, I told him I'm the only federal patient in the country, so I don't know if people from California or other states are going to try, but that's up to them.
Now, remind us again, how is this particular competition under the U.S. Olympic Committee?
Because U.S. sailing comes under, for the Paralympics and the Olympic racing, comes under the Olympic Committee. And so U.S. sailing, this was a sanctioned U.S. sailing race. Because it's a sanctioned U.S. sailing race, the Olympic Committee can oversee it. And so even though they've never asked anybody in any of the competition, and this has been going on now for about 12 years, they've never said a word to anybody about any banned substance. And you're talking about people and paraplegics, quadriplegics, I mean people that are really messed up and on lots of drugs. They've never bothered the first person. But me, with marijuana, well, you know, we just can't have that, can we? So, yeah, they went after me.
A disappointment, I'm sure. This won't affect your sailing for recreation or work with Shake a Leg Miami.
No, I can sail in Miami every day of the week if I want to, with my organization and helping kids and other adults, you know, get out on the water. No, what it does mean, though, is if I decide I want to go for that race again, then I'm going to have to get an exemption, or they call it a TUE, an exemption for being able to use my medicine. And I will be doing that. I didn't do it this year because I kind of took the attitude, well, you know, if they don't want me there, then screw them. I'm not going to bother. I don't need to go to Chicago for 5 days. And also I've been busy with everything else, especially since the storm, since Wilma with the hurricane and things like that. So I decided this year I just wouldn't do it. Now, next year, if I change my mind and decide, then yes, I will be applying for an exemption. And I will get an exemption, or if they don't give me an exemption, they better give me a good reason, because I do plan on going public with this, and I do know that ESPN is looking for anything to do with the subject with the World Anti-Doping Association because of Lance Armstrong and all the bicyclers. So, and the sprinters and this, that, and the other. So I do know that they will go with the story.
One more thing today, or when we spoke just before the interview, you described your work with the Shake a Leg Miami Foundation and mentioned working with James Brady.
Yeah, we found out that James Brady had been a sailor. And so, of course, with his disability, since he was shot, he wasn't able to sail. We got in touch with him and told him about the website, which is shakealegmiami.org. And he checked it out and saw that the boats were set up for disabled. So we were able to get him down to Miami, and he's a pretty big guy. We have a hoist that we can put a person in that lifts you out of your wheelchair and swings you around and puts you right in the chair of the boat. We strapped him in the boat. We left the dock. I handed him the tiller. I said, here, take over. And he took over, and just a big smile came on his face because he could sail. And the wheelchair was left on the dock. So it's a beautiful organization.
Irv, it was a great pleasure to speak with you today. Thanks for sharing your experiences here on Normal's Daily Audio Stash.
Okay, we've got to do it.
Irvin Rosenfeld is one of America's only federal medical marijuana patients and one of the most compelling voices for change. You can contact Irv. We have info on our website at normalaudiostash.com. We'll be right back. going to round out our show today with this esoteric little track from Eric P., found up at podshow.com.
Biggie once again in 1976. It was a peculiar thing. We didn't know what to make of it, but our horses and our mules started fussing. That was unusual. We knew that this was not like anything Biggie had ever done before at our camp, so we shined our flashlights at the stove. It was a bear. Destroying our stove area and belongings, rooting for food. Our food. Personally, I feel like for a while we gained the trust of this family of creatures, our Biggie. We didn't react to their original displays with fear, and we learned quickly to respect their domain and their privacy. There's a lot more to the story than I can present here. Plus, there's things I'd like to pass along that are dead ringers for Bigfoot sighting here out in the woods. But for now, my hope by publishing these sounds and my story is that it will help pass this message along.
$755,000. That is a big number to be sure, but do you know what this number represents? It signifies the total number of citizens in America arrested on marijuana charges in 2004. That's right, 755,000 of your fellow citizens were arrested on marijuana charges. That's an arrest every 40 seconds, and 9 out of 10 of those arrested are for possession-only charges. Does continuing marijuana prohibition make sense to you? It certainly does not to the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws and its members. I'm Normal's Executive Director, Alan St. Pierre, and if you too think that it is high time to end marijuana prohibition and replace it with a tax and regulate policy, please join and support Normal's 36-year legislative efforts to reform our country's misguided marijuana laws. You can learn more about Normal or become an active supporter by calling toll-free 888-67-NORMAL, N-O-R-M-L, or by visiting us on the web at normal, N-O-R-M-L.org.
. 76% of Americans no longer support arresting and jailing marijuana smokers, and nearly as many support the medical patients having access to medical marijuana, and over 80% of our citizens now believe the war on drugs is an ineffective failure. So the question is, when will the government's misguided war on adult marijuana smokers finally end? When? Simple. When you and your like-minded friends, family, and coworkers get involved with an organization such as the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, also known as NORML. My name is Keith Stropp, and I founded the organization in 1970. Contact us at NORML, toll-free, 888-67-NORML, or by visiting the organization's up-to-date webpage at www.normal.org.
This has been NORML's Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Thanks to Paul Armentano, Irvin Rosenfeld, and Dale Gerringer for contributing to today's show. Thanks to Podshow.com for all the great pod-safe music. We feature the band Carne Cruda as our theme. Make sure you visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. That's NORMALAUDIOSTASH.com for more information about every day's show. at AFID Interactive Media for the podcasting technology. We're back at 4:20 tomorrow. If you listen to the Audio Stash, cast your vote at Podcast Alley or other podcast directory services. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Thanks for listening today. See you at 4:20 tomorrow. The podcasting technology of Normal is made possible by Red Aphid Interactive Media. More information at redaphid.com.